You know, they say that they asked Albert Einstein once if he could meet a great personality from history, who would he want to meet? Of course, it's well known that he said he wanted to meet Moses. He'd want to meet Moses, and he'd want to ask him if he really believed, if he really thought that his people, his nation, thousands of years later, would still be reading the same Torah and doing the same observances. And like that, to him, that was mind-boggling. And I think about it, and I think that the Pesach experience and the Pesach experience and the Pesach Seder is really something that's also mind-boggling. That we've been celebrating an event that took place 3,329 years ago. And other than, I don't know exactly what happened in the Midbar because they didn't bring the Korban Pesach except the first year. But maybe they also, they did, maybe they ate matzah, I don't know exactly. But after that, every single year, this is thousands of years, wherever you find Jewish people, many who've been separated for millennia, I don't know how long. The Taimanim were separated for close to 2,000 years. The Ethiopians, I remember once I brought the Ethiopian chief rabbi to speak for a group, and he was talking like, you know, the same sprach, the same language, the same makis, the same matzah, the same, I mean, a little different minhogim here and there, but and they were separated for who knows how long. So it's an amazing thing, and all over the world, and even in the not so religious world, comes to Pesach, like everybody does something, you know. There's some Maxwell House Haggadah or something sitting on the table there. Something's going on, and it's amazing that it's gone on so long, and it's so widespread, and it's like it's mind-boggling. Yesterday I was in Las Vegas, so a doctor there. Mentioned after I was speaking, he mentioned that he always starts his Seder by taking out a whole array of Haggadahs, the Maxwell House and the Manischewitz and Haggadahs that were printed 200 and 400 years ago, maybe as copies, I don't know what, and he puts them all on the table and he shows his family that it's all the same story. They all have the same text. They got a couple of different pictures in some of them. They got a little different design in something else. But the concept of the extent of this Edus, and we'll see in a moment, to Maise Bereshis and Yitzias Mitzrayim and Maimon Har Sinai and the power and the control and the involvement of Hashem in our world is just almost like beyond imagination. And I think that it really is a tremendous source of chizuk to both parents and children when they participate in this experience. One of the things that I like to point out is that most people, not everyone, but most people had the experience of celebrating a Seder at least with three generations. You know, children, parent, grandparent. At least at some time, many people, it's an orphan routine. And it's an interesting thing how the chain of transmission, the links, are double linked. That not only did I hear from my father, but I heard from his father and sort of checked it out. So like I have a double test on the accuracy of the story that's being passed down because I've seen it in two generations. And this is a very common thing. And the secret of how that has survived, I think, is something that's worthy of a few moments of discussion. And the implication of what that survival means is also worthy of some attention. First of all, the Ramban says that, as we know, Odom HaRishon was created at the end of creation, which means that there were no eyewitnesses to the creation of the world itself. Now you might say, well, Hashemayim mesaprim kvoideil. Su einecham lamoroim umereim ivora eile. That's true. And that surmising sometimes even has a stronger sense of conviction. Because I figured it out. I looked up and I said, hey, there has to be a boyri. Avraham Avinu, ben sholer sholim, hikir es boyri, said, mi balabira. There has to be someone who's the balabayas here, who put this all together, who runs this, who controls it. It doesn't happen by accident. So there's a seichel there. But human seichel is often compromised by human emotion. And human emotion says, oh, if there wouldn't be a balabira, maybe I'll be able to do everything I want to do. If I don't, I could maybe say it's all one big accident. And if it's an accident, there's no purpose, there's no responsibility, there's no obligations, there's freedom, one would think. One would call it freedom. It's a poor substitute for freedom, but call it that. So a person has this negiah, a person has this innate need to question. So to such a person, we say, we have edus too. Edus is much harder to question, because edus, I'm, on the one hand, surmising is more convincing sometimes when I come to the conclusion myself. On the other hand, edus is absolute. When there are edim that say, you know, this is what happened. We saw, we witnessed. So it seems significant that there was no edus to Maaseh Bereishis. It seems like that's something we wish we would have. But the Ramban continues and says that we do have edus to Maaseh Bereishis. Because what the Klal Yisrael saw in Mitzrayim, the few million of Foshas that were in Mitzrayim and eventually went out, 600,000 men between the age of 20 and 600,000, Shlish Mot V'chamishim, whatever it says, they're a little bit more than 600,000 men and women and children and elderly people. We're talking about a few million people, and they saw Briyas Olam, because in the Makkos and in the individual detail of the Makkos, in the expanse of the Makkos, in the ongoing one after another, they saw the upheaval of all the laws of nature. They saw that the clarity that there's a Borei Olam. There's a Borei Olam who's still in control. Not only is he the creator, but he's Hamachadish Petuve Bechol Yom Tomid Maaseh Bereishis, because he recreated things. He made blood and water from the same place. He made Choshech and Or in the same place. He did Nisim and Nifloyis. He had people walking through a yam on dry land and the other guys drowning all at the same time. We saw his massive koiches as the Beirei. See, he was established as the Beirei. So Yetzias Mitzrayim is an edus to the Beirei. The Ramban continues, it's an edus to his hashkocha. He takes care of the minute details of life, because that's what we saw in the Makkos. It's edus to the fact that he's still involved with the world, and he's involved with the world on the minutest details. And there's edus to the fact that he speaks to people, because there's such a thing as a Novi, because Moshe Rabbeinu was clearly the Novi. Hashem spoke to him and said, this is going to happen at this time, it's going to go away, it's going to come, it's going to go, and all of these details. So we actually have eyewitness testimony to Briyas Olam. But the eyewitness testimony, of course, goes much further than that, because we saw, even beyond Briyas Olam, we saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu's tipul with each and every individual. When he had one man and one woman at the culmination of creation, that he was able to deal with them, okay. But millions, the Mitzrim must have numbered in millions also. Everyone, the frog was there and not here, and the Arabe was here and not there, and the Kinim was here and not there, the Makas Bechiras, it singled out the one of Bechir, and what not Shaykh. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu's involvement with each and every individual on an individual basis also was testified to, was witnessed by millions of people. And then, of course, took us out of Mitzrayim, took us to Har Sinai. That's the last stage in the Geula. The Sipurna says, Vayitzesi refers to the Hafsukas, Hashibur on Rosh Hashanah. Vitzalti refers to the actual going out of Mitzrayim. The Goalti refers to the Kriyas Yamsuf because that was the Geula, because then we saw our oppressors drowning, so we felt redeemed. Avalokachti eschem li la'om, that refers to Maimon Har Sinai. So he took us out of Sinai, and again, millions of eyewitnesses hearing the Bo'ir Olam speaking directly to them, hearing the Bo'ir Olam speaking to Moshe Rabbeinu and authorizing him as the Novi, as the teacher, as the spokesman, as the Bavur, Yishma Om Bedabri Moch Vegam Becho Ya'aminu Le'olam. And we have all of this with a massive system of Eidus. But this Eidus was not just written down in a book. This Eidus has been given over verbally generation after generation, generation after generation, to this very day. And there must be, I don't know if anyone ever calculated, but there must be millions, maybe it's hundreds of millions, maybe, I have no clue, I have no idea in these things, but of chains passed down from my father, my grandfather, my great grandfather, my great 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 great, and yours, and yours, and yours, and yours, and yours, and yours, and everybody, and everybody, all out there. It's infinite, the chains of transmission from one generation to the next. And every single year, the same story, the same text, the same Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. But it was probably, no, it was most definitely strengthened by the following two conditions. Number one, the chomer that the Torah placed against chometz on Pesach. Because matzah was eaten, zecha lechipozein, matzah represents the chesed Hashem, that he didn't even allow them to wait the extra, I guess it's it would be more than 18 minutes, to wait the extra few minutes just to bake the bread so that they could leave and have food. No. They had to take it the way it was and bake it in the sun. And the chipozen, when the time came, when that moment came, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu wasn't going to let them stay for another second in Mitzrayim, and everybody had to leave instantaneously. So that's the... But the chometz, the chomer against chometz, bal yeroa, bal yemotze, I mean, the extent, you don't find that in any other lav, in any other... any other gather like that in the Mitzvah HaTorah. Because why? And the Chinuch explains, because Yetzias Mitzrayim is the yesod of everything that we know, is the yesod, the foundation of our Hakora, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of Hakora of Bria Se'ilim, of Hakora of Hashem's Hashkocha Protis, of Hakora of Hashem's creating us and giving us a mission in life. And Memela, that has to be so choshuv. And the way it was maintained so choshuv, with that which was prohibited with such a, I hate to say the word, fanaticism almost. You know, a mashu of chometz and can't own it and can't see it, can't have it, can't this, can't, give out. And not to mention what the chachomim added to make extra sure, to make sure that there's no chometz. And this in itself has such an impact, because here I am testifying to events, but I'm testifying at great human cost, not to mention the cost of matzahs, that's something else, let's not talk about that, but great human cost. People used to see their grandmothers, their great grandmothers climbing on the ceilings to clean for chometz, and that was really above and beyond what anybody should be doing. But the intensity with which they did it, and everything, and a mashu, a brekla, pirurim, and I'll never forget the Pesach I spent by the Grainemans in Bnei Brak, where all the svarim were covered. They put, you know, you couldn't touch them, and they had 10 svarim that they were going to use. And my job was, I was a young kid then, my job was to go through every page like this, to make sure there was not a crumb of chometz, like this. I don't know how I did it. Like this, every page, you know, like this, every page. 10 books, I think there were. The rest they weren't going to use. You know, that was what the Chabina Rav said. The Chabina Rav, they told him, it was the Godel Hador Bizmanoi, they told him that by the Chazon Ish, somebody went there on Pesach and they saw his sefer on the Chazon Ish's table. you know, like the Chazanish is learning your sefer. So Shabina Rav said, he says, because a whole year long he doesn't look at it, so he's not worried about the chametz. So that's why Pesach can be on his table. But anyway, so Lemaisa, the intensity of the seriousness and chorus for chametz, Rabbeinu Shalalem, what do you want for my life? You know, and all of this added to the so. The survival of this edus, number one, was a tremendous burden, and it was with tremendous chashivus because this had to go on. We have to pass on this message. We can't neglect this because so much is at stake. And by enhancing and increasing the extent of the chomer, what the Torah has sent the message that this stuff is very important. You got to do with it. That's one, the chomer ha'inyan. But the other one is the mitzvahs that were edus. The whole Seder is such an exercise in not just talking, not just reading, but reliving, reenacting. It's the cherus and the avdus. It's the karpas in the salt water, which maybe remember the meager diet and the tears. The charesis, which remember the mortar that they made to put the bricks in. Of course, the matzah that they ate, both the holach mo'anyo, the meager diet that they had when they had a little piece of matzah that we mentioned at the beginning of the Seder, and the matzahs that we eat, l'shem matzahs mitzvah, which is the matzah zecha l'chipozin, because it reminds us of the speed he didn't even allow, lo hispik b'tzekum shalav yisein l'achmitz, and all of this, the whole, and the telling of the story, and the way the story is presented in a way, in an ingenious way, is through question and answer, involving the children. And involving the children is brilliant. Why? Doesn't need me to say it's brilliant. Why? For two reasons. Number one, because when you're involved, you pay attention. You know, nobody pays attention to lectures, right? Nobody pays attention to lectures. So, but if I question, answer, back and forth, interactive, that's... But there's one thing. But the Rambam is mashma, that the reason the Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim V'Yigadlu L'Bincho is for the chizuk in my own emuna. Because when I tell this story over to my child, what I am doing is reminding myself and strengthening myself in my own realization that this is what happened. Because I wouldn't lie to my son. I wouldn't lie to my children. And Memela, what I'm telling him over is for me the greatest chizuk, because I'm reliving it and I'm passing it on in a way that clearly indicates that it's real. And that's the reality that's been going on for thousands of years with this type of an expression. And of course, what this has led to is a focus, not just, as the Ramban says, not just on the Nisim Geluyim of Mitzrayim, but on all of the Hashgocha Protis that we see in our own daily lives, which the Ramban's Loshen is that a person who doesn't recognize that has no chelek in the Teras Yisroel, because that's the yisod of everything, that Hashem is not in the past, he's not passe, he's not past tense, it's not hoyo, but it's hoyve as well as yiye, and he's in the present, he's as active in the present as he was in the past, except more behester ponim, and we see that. I'll never forget the first Seder that I had. It was in my, at the time after I was engaged in my future father-in-law's house, and we got to talk about his own personal saga, how in 1940 he went all across Europe at the time when people were not traveling across Europe in order to get to Italy, to get a boat, to get to Eretz Yisrael. And he 10 mamish nisim that took place, like... One person went with him, didn't make it this. He had to get the passport, he had to get the visa, he had to get this, he overheard this. Yeah, a whole thing. I have it written up someplace if anyone's interested. But it's the personal Nisim. And I remember that night we forgot that there was a Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's like it was talking about Yetzias Europa, and we forgot about Mitzrayim. But it was real. He was sitting with an individual whose life was saved through miracles in 1940. And this is the same miracles. This is the same Ribbono Shel Olam. This is the same pattern of survival that has gone on for thousands of years. And the focus of the Seder, when we look back to the past, when we see the testimony, when we see that unbroken chain, which is mind-boggling. I mean, just think about it wherever you go, all over the world at that same time, except the time zone difference. Jews sit down all over the world and they tell the same story, the same Haggadah, the same Nisim. I'll never forget when I brought the Ethiopian chief rabbi and we were to speak, and we were shocked how these people were separated for so long, and same story. Everything's the same thing. It happened. Millions upon millions, and I don't know how many hundreds of millions of Edus testifying to the events of the past, and not just verbal testimony, and not just written testimony, but life testimony. Living it, living it through the experience of the Seder, reenacting it at the Seder, and through the Seder, drawing the strength to remember it every single day and every single night. And the posuk which the Rambam brings for the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, Beleil Tesvov, is really the posuk that tells us that you have to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim all the time. Zochar es hayoim hazeh asher yetzosem mimitzrayim, which is a zochar, a loshen mokar, means a zchira tmidis, always to remember. And the Seder provides that experience that strengthens the memory, makes the memory more vivid. I don't have to think back that, you know, when I was 5 years old, I remember I had a Seder, and now I'm thinking back when I think of Yetzias Mitzrayim. I only have to think back a year. A year, most of us can think back. And that gives it, not even a year, because you have Sukkot, which is also Yetzias Mitzrayim, whatever, but this real focus on what happened, and that it's a reality, and it maintains that reality, and it's maintained that reality this way for thousands of years. It was a Talmud of, I forget the name, it slips my mind right now. It was a Talmud of Reb Chaim Volozhiner, and he writes that in the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, it's also, you have to speak about the Neflois, the Nisim, the Chesed of Hashem, but you also have to speak about the concept of Tzadik Veraloi. Very interesting. He says, because that can interfere, the suffering can interfere with the ability to appreciate all the chesed, to appreciate all the nisim, to appreciate all the ashgocha protis, to connect through that with an active, living b'yirei olam who's still so actively involved in every aspect of our existence so many years later, and he was so intimately involved in Mitzrayim and continues to be throughout the millennia. He says, this concept of the suffering in the world can interfere with it. And he says that therefore you have to in some way to address that so that the message of Emunah should come across as strong as possible. So I thought, you know, one of the it's a complicated sugya and there's no real simple way to address it. One thing is for sure, that if a person who sees the suffering of the world focuses before, or at least every time he sees that, on all the chesed that exists in the world, it sort of tends to counterbalance it. One of the strongest approaches to help people to cope with the magnitude of the suffering of the Holocaust is to see the magnitude of the nisim that took place to save people. People, I don't know how many, I don't have numbers, but there were also humongous numbers of people that were saved mamish with nisim v'nifloys. There used to be a famous woman who was like a lecturer about the Holocaust, and when they would ask her the inevitable question that everybody asks, may I ask you a question, please? You know, where was God during the Holocaust? So her answer would be, right here by my side. He was here, and he took me from here to here to here to here. That's why I'm here today. And so many people in the tens and hundreds and maybe even millions, I don't have a number, on people that have been saved and built families and deiris through nisim gluyim that took place, that shack. So that helps a little bit to, because why? I'll tell you why. And the reason for it is very simple. Because any question that we have on Hashem is not a rational question. There can be no rational question on Hashem. Because really, Azuigor, you think you're going to understand Hashem? You know, as somebody once put it, if I thought I could understand everything Hashem does, I probably wouldn't be able to serve him anymore. You know, what do I need him for? I got it all. So obviously, but it's not an intellectual question, but it's emotional. It's emotional, but how? But for so many people, so much suffering, so many rivers of blood, so much. And sometimes the only way to counter an emotional question is with an emotional answer. Look at all the Hatova. Look at all the Nisim. Look at what happened. Look at the people that were saved with such miracles. It's not Shaykh. If anyone were to write, and they have written many books, put together all the miracles of all the people that survived with the most amazing, unbelievable Ashkocha. What? Yeah, all there's hundreds of thousands, if not millions of stories. And each person had, it's not like one story a person. It's like if a guy survived 4 or 5 years, he must have 40 or 140 or 400 or 4,000 little, so he can't remember them. So, I mean, you take it all together, that emotionally can help counterbalance the terrible suffering of the tragedy. That's one thing, and I think that's important. The other thing is, and this is something I mentioned so many times, but I think at the Seder and talking about the Seder, it's even more critical, and it certainly discusses this particular point, and that is that famous comment from the Tosfos Rid, where in his Haggadah on B'tchila Oiv the Avodah Zorah Hoyu Avoseinu, so he asked the Kasha, he says, we thank Hashem for taking us out of Mitzrayim. Wow, that's great, but he put us there. So, like, if he wouldn't have put us there, he wouldn't have to take us out. So, what's going on? So he says, B'tchila Oiv the Avodah Zorah Hoyu Avoseinu. It says, we descend from Oiv the Avodah Zorah. Terach was an Oiv the Avodah Zorah. In our genetic makeup, there's this gam of Avodah Zorah. It's there. It's passed on from generation to generation. And he says, there's no way that a person who has that genetic makeup could ever be zoiche bedin to Maimon Har Sinai, to receive the Torah from the Bir Yoilim, to be privileged to receive that Torah, to be given it to him as a matona, to be given it to him to be able to decide its halachos, to be given to him exclusively to the exclusion of Philo of the Bir Yoilim himself. If the Bir Yoilim will come and say, Rabbeisai, in the Beis Din, you made the wrong decision, and the Beis Din will say, sorry. You wrote in your Torah, it's not b'shamayim. We don't pay attention to the baskol. Sorry, we can't. We have to pask in the locha. The Torah, what he gave, what he gave us in that shaykh. He says, that couldn't happen, b'din, to someone who had that in his history. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu put us in Mitzrayim. What? One second. He put us in Mitzrayim. He put us in Mitzrayim, and he made us suffer. V'chas aleinu ad rachmonis, and with rachamim, he was able to. I use the word entitle us. It's like an entitlement. We didn't earn it, but we became entitled by dint of the suffering. We became entitled to brochos and nisim and matonos and gadlus and nitzchius that we never could have been zeicher to bedin. And that's also something that a person has to keep in mind, that sometimes when we see life's problems, you know, we don't see the whole story. In fact, when Hashem Eoiv was, after spending so much time trying to figure out what happened to him, he lost his children, he lost his wealth, he lost his health, and finally Hashem tells him at the end, Eifo ha-yisa b'yosti oretz, where were you when I created the world? Do you see the total picture? Do you see that beautiful needle point from beginning to end that you can only see from upstairs, and all you see is the threads hanging down at the bottom? So he's that concept of it's beyond our ability to understand, that we have to realize that Hashem in his infinite wisdom and kindness has many chishbuinus, and he could want to give us things that we have no hasoga, and we don't know the limitations that we have. We don't know the genetic limitations, we don't know the schus limitations, we don't know the practical limitations, we don't know the emotional limitations. But Hashem, I want to take you beyond the limitations. I want to give you so much, and the only way I can do it is berachamim. I can't justify it any other way, because you didn't earn it, you're not earning it, and the world has to go with mishpat, otherwise it doesn't work. So that's something also I think that has to be kept in mind. I'm sorry, what did you say? Well, listen, you know, the truth of the matter is that this is not for me to say. Excuse me. First of all, I didn't answer the question of Mizraim. So he didn't know about the Holocaust. Wait. Take it slow. Now, the truth of the matter is that
the
what?
The Mizraim answer helps.
You know there's other chishbonos. Now you want to understand all the chishbonos. Do you know what? You know the story they say with the Chassidus Sherebbe, that in one of the camps, that someone asked him why does Hashem let this happen? What's going on? So he says, you know, I'm an old man, and I learned a long time ago, I don't ask him why, because I'm afraid if I ask him why, he'll say, oh, you want to know why? Come on upstairs, and I'll show you the whole picture. I'm not quite ready to go. Yeah? So I don't know. Some rebbe, I don't know. So the point is like this, that there are many things that are beyond us. But this principle can certainly apply there as well. But I do want to say something. I just want to say something off the record. Do you know how serious the matzav was? I cannot. Anyone who can explain away the Holocaust doesn't feel the pain of the suffering. So I don't mean to try to even do that. Because if you feel the pain of the suffering, what people went through, then you can't just, I understand, it makes a lot of sense, you know, everything is good. And we can't make sense out of it. But we do know that Western Europe was on the verge of collapse in terms of Yiddishkeit. There was the intermarriage rate, and the assimilation was not shaykh. It was even penetrating Eastern Europe already with the Haskalah. Even Poland started to feel the inroads of this influence, and we don't know the extent of destruction that from within that was taking place. We don't know what would have happened otherwise, and we don't know what we needed in order to prevent the destruction of Klal Yisrael, and what in order to bring about the eventual Geula, what had to happen in order to turn things around. So we really don't know that. There definitely was a resurgence of Torah on a certain level after the Holocaust. The famous yeshivas that everybody knows, their names were small little buildings, and today they're campuses that are l'shem u'tiferes. There's more people that are learning Torah today than in pre-war Europe. Koful, who knows how many? I mean, there's so many more. Anyway, yeah. So, anyway, well, one second. What?
I mean, but the assimilation rate is still.
Okay. So now, okay. Wait. Now let me say one thing. Please, you push me into this, and I really apologize. I apologize to the Kiddushim. I apologize to everybody. But I want to say one more thing. Yeah. I want to say, yeah, listen, I want to just mention one more thing just because you forced the issue. Yeah? If you would walk over, yeah, to an Erlich Hayid who lived at the time in the Holocaust, and say to him like this, and this is just conjecture, mamish, I have no right to say it, but we have a right to conjecture. That's what I believe. That's what Eov did. Eov, only in Perek Lamed Ches did Hashem tell him the answer that it's beyond his understanding. He spent Lamed ches prokim, trying to figure out why the suffering was going on. So we have a right to think, even though we have no right to say that we know. So I just want to ask you, when you walk over to this Jew, you hear say, Reb Yid, my boy is tfei. I'll give you a choice. What would you rather have? Would you rather have you and your family die al kiddush Hashem? Or would you rather have grandchildren and great-grandchildren that were goyim? Forgive me for being so blunt. What do you think he would have said? My boy is tvei. Do you want to die, you and your family, al kiddush Hashem, and be zeiche to ayin lo yiro aso le kimzul asecho? Or to be cursed with 3-4 generations later that... What do you mean on what? Wait one second. So I have no doubt that the Erlich Yidden would have said, no question. First of all, many Erlich Yidden Taka wanted to die al Kiddush Hashem, but that's not a discussion for now, because the schus is Ein L'Shire. But and anyone who died in the Holocaust died al Kiddush Hashem. But let's not discuss that, because that's very hard to talk about. So number one, you hear? Number one is that I believe they would have said, no question about it. Number two, what about the non-religious person in the Holocaust? Okay? Now, he certainly may not have answered that answer. But let me ask you a question, yeah? Where would he be better off? Having lived a life of not Shmiras HaMitzvahs, and children and grandchildren, and eventually presiding over the watching the intermarriage and the goyim that emanated from his family, or the unique opportunity of a person who didn't live his life al taras hakodesh with Shmiras HaMitzvahs, having the privilege, forgive me, but that's what it is, the privilege of dying al kiddush Hashem. We have no idea. It's mind-boggling. And when you think about that, what that does is as follows. It isn't meant to answer anything, because we can't answer. Anyone who thinks they have answers is foolish, naive, and insensitive. Because... There are things that could be understood. There are things that could be understood. And the truth of the matter is that these things, you know, they make sense. So I think that the end result is as follows. We have to realize that Hashem has his cheshbonos. We have to realize that Hashem there definitely were people that suffered during the Holocaust, and they built up after that the most amazing families, the most amazing businesses, the most amazing moisters. That, and we don't know what schus contributes to what and what suffering I had to go through in order to be able to get to this point, and we can't understand these things. But to know that those concepts exist sometimes could help a little bit. But either way, what we really have to see is that Hashem is in his chesed is infinite. The nisim that took place in Mitzrayim were the ultimate chesed. They testified to the Briyas Ha'olam, which in itself is the greatest chesed. Olam chesed yibone. Hashem didn't need this world. He only did it for purposes of doing chesed, because that's his essence. That's what he's about. And when you look at the total picture, and you look at the way it has survived throughout the Deiros, and the Edus that is presented to all of these events, it could be a tremendous source of chizuk for everybody. And maybe we should leave it at that. I think so. Okay.